Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is a Weekly Comics Spotlight 255 for comics originally released on June 27th, 2012. Starting us off in DC is Justice League Dark number 10. This is Jeff Lemire's second issue. They've changed up the roster a little bit, and they get their new headquarters here, the House of Mystery. You know, this is one of those that could have easily veered heavy into kind of that Vertigo corner of the DC universe. And they're, let me know what you think on this, but I think they're really kind of toeing the line. They're getting enough into that area to, I think, you know, interest potentially those kinds of readers, yet staying in a very superhero friendly-ish kind of a tone and style, to I think also, I'm not going to say justify the Justice League name, because I think the connection to the Justice League is kind of tenuous at best, but to fit comfortably in a superhero universe. And would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. You know, and I had actually dropped this book back after issue 6, I think. But then Hassan was really raving about issue 9 with Jeff Lemire writing. So I picked up issue 9 and I said, okay, let me read it and see. And I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was as great as he thought it was. But it was good enough for me to say, okay, let me try out issue 10. You know, I'll give them another issue. And I really liked issue 10. I liked 10 a lot more than I liked issue number 9. I mean, I liked the, I really liked this artist, Michael Janin. And I liked the House of Mystery. I liked the story. I liked the characterizations and the interplay between the characters. I really enjoyed the new take on the Demons 3. It's just a lot of stuff that was presented in this issue just really clicked with me. I enjoyed this one thoroughly, much, much more than issue 9, and it's got this back on my pull list.
Well, that's good to hear. Hey, what I like is how they're doing things, like you said, bringing in the Demons 3, we've got Dr. Mist, we've got the Books of Magic, we got the House of Secrets, or House of Mystery, they allude to the, or mention the House of Secrets, and they're really bringing in a lot of the magical kind of aspects and stuff of the DC universe. And in some cases, it's very similar to how it was. In other cases, it's kind of a new take on it. Like, again, the Demons 3 are notably different. And this was also one of the better kind of explanations of what the Books of Magic are that I've read. Now, granted, I was never heavy into the Vertigo stuff, so that may have been similar to what they did before. I really think the balancing act they're doing here of kind of staying true to the Vertigo characters and the mystical stuff, yet, again, not diving too deep in that area, is going to make this potentially a bridge book between the people who are gravitating towards the Animal Man and Swamp Thing and iVampire characters and those gravitating towards the Justice League and those other characters. It's going to be interesting to see how the sales fare once we start seeing, you know, a couple of issues after Jeff Lemire's taken over, see what happens there.
I agree with you. I mean, I think Lemire did a really good job of merging the kind of Vertigo feel with the superhero feel. And that's what I kind of wasn't getting out of the first arc on the series. It just was a little too, I don't know, a little too wonky with the teeth and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
this one played a nice balance.
For me, the earlier stuff was going too much in the Vertigo, you know, direction, which was always good stuff, but not to my tastes.
Well, I mean, I like Vertigo books, but if I'm going to read a Vertigo book, I want to read a Vertigo book, not one that was toned down the way that one was, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But this was a great balancing act.
What I also liked is they did some foreshadowing. In addition to setting a lot of stuff up, or establishing a lot of stuff in this issue, because I feel they did more than just set it up. I mean, they went with some of it for a bit. They kind of, you know, not kind of, they very deliberately foreshadow that somebody's going to be the key to kind of safeguarding the books of magic. And I'm curious if this is going to be a new character, if it's going to be, what was it, Tim from the old Books of Magic series, or somebody else that we've seen before, but might not expect or whatever. So, you know, they've tossed that mystery out. That should be fun to see what happens.
Yeah,
I go ahead.
I was going to say, I like how they're pulling different characters in, and it was enough that I don't know how well this has, how they've set up some of these characters in the previous issues. You know, it's like, but I know who Black Orchid is. I know who Madame Xanadu are. You know, it's just, so I was able to kind of just move along with this story and, you know, just kind of get into it. I didn't know if that would put off, and I kind of know the House of Secrets and House of Mystery kind of thing. So it was kind of like cool the way they were introducing. I don't know how much that would play with someone who's completely new to this stuff.
I don't think there's anything about the backstory on these characters that's particularly relevant to the story or to the characterizations of those guys that isn't given in this issue. I mean, we find out that Dr. Mist and Black Orchid have been working for Argus and are connected to the Black Room and all that stuff in here. And I think Lemire is doing a very good job of showing and portraying the characterization versus referencing. I think with other writers, this could have been a very inaccessible kind of a story because a lot of other writers, I think, have many other writers, not necessarily a lot, but there are a number that are leaning so heavily on the characters already having been established that they do little to further the characterization or to really illustrate it in the course of any given story.
No, I agree with that.
And I love how they're bringing in, you know, Mordru and Merlin and, you know, just a bit of name dropping and some stuff like that and, you know, tossing in some very cool concepts that could play out for, you know, who knows how long to come with, you know, little aspects about the house rules for the House of Mystery and some stuff like that. All in all, it's very fun, and I was really impressed with just how much story happened in this issue. I mean, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I give this one a 5. It was a really great story. It engaged me. I did not think that anything was, you know, for me, lacking. I loved the art, and it was good enough to get me putting this book that I had dropped back on my pull list. So, can't ask for anything more.
Cool. And for me, it was a very solid 4 out of 5. Didn't quite get to that 5 out of 5, but I can definitely see where once Lemire has some time to kind of, you know, plant a couple of more seeds, let some of that come to fruition and stuff, where it could easily be a sleeper hit kind of a title for a lot of people, myself included.
Very cool. Shall we move on to Marvel? We got FF number 19.
Now, this was kind of interesting because this was not what we were promised. We were promised in the solicitation the Light Brigade. The first time since Johnny Storm died, the class travels to a now radically different negative zone. See what happens when Annihilus goes with them, and what does the future hold for the Light Brigade? Now, that was an interesting solicit in and of itself. This was a fun issue, but it wasn't that issue. On the one hand, I really don't care. I liked what I got. I was entertained. That should, though, make this a fully returnable issue for retailers. Whether it does or not, another matter entirely. I'm curious, though, why we got this Safari story, which seemed actually like a very natural outgrowth of the last issue, versus the Light Brigade thing we were initially promised.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's interesting when you point these things out, because I tend to not read the solicits, you know, or pay attention to the solicits, you know, and I read the comic, so I didn't notice that, you know, it wasn't what had originally been solicited, but this is very different. I mean, this, it seemed like a, you know, kind of a breather issue to me, which was not bad, and it's setting up this new character from Wakanda, the little girl, what was her name, Anome, I think?
Yes.
You know, to be joining the Future Foundation, so that was kind of cool, you know, just a little light. A light fun, some really great Hickman dialogue, with the exception of that one panel where the jackal guy or hyena guy sees Dragon Man hiding behind the tree. I thought that was pretty weak. But you know, other than that, it was good.
Well, this is the kind of issue that series need every once in a while. Kind of slow stuff down, still have a little action, a little adventure, a little, you know, conflict or whatever for the sake of having it almost, so it's not just talking heads. But this gave us a chance to kind of see the students as students, get a little bit of character development, and more just kind of spend time with the characters. Because really, aside from this new character of Onome, which we get a lot, we get shown and see a lot about, the development for most of the other characters was minimal at best. It was more reinforcing what we already knew about them for the most part. I just liked little things like after the opening splash page where they're riding the elephants and stuff, which was referenced in the, you know, hey, they'd like to do it last issue. We get a panel with Dragon Man riding a zebra, and then a couple of panels later, he's like carrying the zebra because, you know, his weight was a little too much for it. And he's like, obviously it got tired and he said, okay, I'll take over or whatever. I mean, that nice little tiny bit of characterization, does it really add to the story? No, but it was fun. I was very pleased with this issue for what it was. You know, it was a good fun look also at Wakanda.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Wakanda in recent years. I mean, well, since that...
Well, maybe you haven't, but well, I mean, we've seen quite a bit.
When I say recent years, when I say since that horrible, horrible thing with the vibranium, and at least that was the last time I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
and you know, turning Black Panther into Daredevil, you know, it was like, yikes. So let's get back to this kind of Wakanda. This is the good Wakanda.
Well, it's interesting, though, because we never really see the Black Panther here. We never see, you know, Reed or Johnny or Sue or Ben or, you know, any of the Fantastic Four and stuff. It was good to see that these kids could really, you know, carry the issue with no problem whatsoever. I think with other writers, they would have felt the need to keep the name characters, if you will, the firmly established ones, you know, front and center to move things along, or at least in a subplot or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, but once again, Valeria, you know, is proving to be a really strong character. And I'm curious if when Marvel reshuffles creative teams that they seem to be doing in a couple of months, if some of these characters, like again, Valeria, who've proven to be very entertaining and very strong under Hickman's run, continue that way or not. Because who's doing this next?
It's Fraction.
Fraction. That's what I thought.
I'm not convinced that I'm sticking around for that.
No, I'll give him. You know, I'm gonna stick around. I mean, I'm an easy sell.
You'll,
we know
you'll
this,
buy but... anything from Marvel. So I
or will... DC. I mean, I'm DC. An equal opportunist.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about that last week. How it's, you know, it gives me a chance to make sure I get all the good stuff, but. It will be interesting to see how many people get on or off with the first issue and how many actually give the new creative team, you know, a chance.
I'll tell you this is the thing. I mean, if DCBS has like a 75% off discount or something, it'll be a no-brainer. So like for a buck or whatever, you know, I will try it out, you know, with the new team. If it is just regular price or, you know, just, you know, 50% off or something, if it is the next logical issue number, I will try out, I'll give it an issue to win me over. If they start it over at number one again, I am guaranteed not going to buy it.
Interesting. I mean, I totally see where you're coming from, and I think a lot of people are going to have similar but not identical views. There are some people who are going to say, if it's a new number one, I'll try it, versus if it's the next issue, I won't.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's the more common probably thing. I just get so weary of them restarting things at number one only to go back to the original numbering a year later.
Oh yeah, it's sales shenanigans, marketing shenanigans, no two ways about that. But what it says to me is that, you know, and this is no surprise, I think we've known this for a while, we're in an age where people are following creators, not characters. I mean, there are certain creators that click with you, certain ones that don't, and depending who's on the title is as important or potentially in some cases more important than who's in the title.
Absolutely. You know, and it's just, you know, I have dropped the Avengers franchise, for instance, because I kind of just wearied of Bendis's storytelling style. And that's just me personally. It's not that he's a bad storyteller. It's just that I personally am at a point where I don't care for that particular style that he tends to use. So, you know, that's that. You know, he's going over and doing X-Men. I don't see how the combination of Bendis and X-Men is going to be compelling at all to me. But Hickman is going to the Avengers, right? So I will be back to the Avengers, and I will read Hickman's Avengers.
Well, and again, Hickman has shown his familiarity with the Marvel characters and his ability to work exceedingly well with them on this on Fantastic Four and this title. So I can totally see following him to another title. But as far as Bendis going on X-Men, I would be hard-pressed to name any writer that could go on to X-Men that I think would pull you into the X-quarter of the universe. I think even then, I don't think Hickman could keep you there.
I don't know if he could or not, but I would give it a try. I would give him the benefit of the doubt, you know, that he could, you know, manage to tell a coherent story that did not lose itself in arcana of continuity and, you know, craziness. I think to Bendis's benefit, I think that his take potentially will be that way also. I mean, I think that he has the strong potential to tell a story that does not get mired down in crazy continuity and all that. It's just that, you know, he will also likely tell a story where it takes, you know, an issue for someone to, you know, have 5 pages of talking heads and walk to the door and, you know, do some other kind of stuff. And it just, his storytelling style is not something that I'm a fan of.
One of the other things you mentioned in there is kind of that whole concept of being mired in continuity and all that baggage and stuff. I find that to be interesting because both the comics we've talked about so far have a lot of things that they have referenced of past characters, places, events, whatever. I mean, think about it. The roster of the Future Forum here is made up of essentially bit characters from tons of different FF stories. Yet right. It's not mired in continuity and baggage.
It's that whole thing where we've talked before. It's consistency versus continuity. When things are consistent and they feel right and they don't seem like you need to understand, you know, it's just like here, I've got these Moloid kids or I've got Dragon Man or something.
Well, let's
it's told in a way that I don't feel like I need to know all this kind of stuff in order to go with the flow of the story.
Exactly.
Whereas in X-Men, I pick up an issue of that and they're throwing in all these crazy mutants and making overt references to Arcana from way back when, and I feel like I'm missing out on stuff.
Well, like in this issue, Bentley shows up. He is the clone of the Wizard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know in one of the solicits upcoming, I think the Wizard's going to come back and either try to either kill him or take him back or whatever. And no doubt, in that story, we're going to get a reminder in that issue of, hey, this is who Bentley is and why that matters. Whereas in this issue, it didn't matter. We didn't get it. You know, good writers can juggle this kind of information very effortlessly and very seamlessly. Again, witness how much information Jeff Lemire got into that Justice League Dark issue. And, you know, here, how much we learned about little aspects of Wakanda, the different tribes, aspects of its political, you know, situation and stuff like that, without being exposition heavy. I mean, there are good writing practices that can be done to make that seem almost invisible and natural. And, you know, some writers are simply a lot better at it than others. And in some cases, again, the X-Men fall prey to this. It's almost hard to write a story with the 15,000 characters they tend to have without having to go make reference to specific past events because they're so mired in continuity and minutia and history.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting just to see if they can ever kind of pull the X-Men out of that, you know, that depth of continuity baggage.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyways, FF19, not the issue it was solicited as, but again, I'm okay with it. Frankly, I probably enjoyed this more than I might have if it had been what they promised. For me, this was a very strong 4 out of 5. It was a light issue, but an enjoyable one.
4 out of 5 for me, too. And then our last pick of the week is the Hypernaturals number 1. It's from Boom Studios. It's Abnett and Lanning taking a take on some... Well, I'm not sure if it's creator-owned or not, but it is a non-Marvel and DC set of kind of cosmic heroes.
The copyright is Boom Entertainment. So, if I had to guess, might not be creator-owned, but hard to tell for certain. First thing I'm going to say about this, anyone who has read The Legion of Superheroes at any point in the past, like the whole concept of superheroes in a kind of a sci-fi future world or whatever, but maybe got a little bogged down by the Legion, because it can be a little intimidating and overwhelming, pick this up. Anyone who has read the cosmic stuff Abnett and Lanning has done over at Marvel, pick this up. This is Abnett and Lanning doing cosmic. They're doing it great. This has very similar aspects to the Legion of Superheroes without being a ripoff of it. Again, sci-fi future with superheroes. Basic premise applies to both. They do it with a very manageable number of characters. They introduce things well. And this was just a very impressive first issue. You know, a few of these pages I think were in that Free Comic Book Day issue back in May. But here we and they're kind of in the middle of the book, or the pages I think they picked. Here we get, a good sense of context, a lot of information, a couple of kind of in-universe house ads, if you will. I was very impressed with this. But, you know, Abnett and Lanning have been very impressive writers kind of overall for the most part. There are a few things they've done that didn't click with me. But when they're on their A-game, and I think that applies here, they do some great stuff. What did you think?
I liked it. I think that this is going to draw comparisons to Byrne's trio, for instance. Not directly, but in the sense that, you know, Byrne's trio is essentially the Fantastic Four, right? It's just when and I read the first issue and I really liked it, but, you know, after I got a couple of issues into it, and was issue 3 come out or just issue 2?
Two.
The second issue of that, I'm digressing here, but for a point, I mean, it felt so derivative of Fantastic Four that I just, personally, I didn't really enjoy it at all because it was so derivative of Fantastic Four. Now, this one is similar in concept to the Legion of Superheroes, but not derivative of it. At least that's the way I felt about it.
Again, superheroes in the future. Yeah. That's the similarity.
Well, I mean, you had the thing where you were kind of naming the characters, which is kind of a trope that they use in Legion, which is a good trope. And same thing with some of the powers that they're using, where they've got the little captions with the little arrows kind of talking about what they're doing, which is, you know, I've seen that before, but it was done well. And it actually aided me in understanding, you know, some of the information that they're, you know, throwing at us in this issue. So I didn't mind that.
I would say, I mean, while they have done that in the Legion, it's not like we got the roll call, like this classic Legion. And the whole naming of the characters and stuff like that, we've seen that in a ton of Marvel books, too. So to me, that's a writing style thing versus making it too similar to any particular property. Were there anything else that made you think really of the trio stuff? Because I mean, I see where you're coming from, but that didn't occur to me at all.
Oh, just, you know, people on the internet are already making those comparisons. You know, it's like they're just saying this is like really highly derivative of Legion. And I don't see that. And, you know, when I'm trying to counter that, saying I don't feel this is derivative of Legion, but something that is derivative, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, it's like you want to see something that's derivative, read Trio number 2. You know, that's something that's highly derivative. Reading this, I don't see this as being derivative at all. I see this as being in the vein of, you know, that. But it had, you know, different things that just were nothing at all like the Legion, or even nothing at all like Guardians of the Galaxy. I've seen them someplace before you know, so it's not like completely new, but you know, with the ads that they stuck in here, the interviews, the, you know, the stuff like that at the front and back of the issue, you know, it's not, that's not completely new, but there's not a whole lot of things that are completely new. I liked that stuff, and I think it added some extra flavor and dimension to the first issue as well.
The thing that's popping in my mind is Wild Guard had some of those same sorts of storytelling techniques. Again, the interviews, the in-house ads, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, to me, like you said, this is not derivative. It's not a rehash of the Legion. It is evocative of, it has similarities to,
yeah, that's,
and broad
brushstrokes.
Yeah,
that's the good word, evocative. It's evocative of. That's the perfect word.
Yeah. It's not like when the Guardians of the Galaxy had a spaceship, they had little insignias that were on the exact chest location where they would have them on Next Gen. They would tap them, they would beam up. I mean, they were riffing on Star Trek Next Gen big time at that point. And again, nothing right or wrong about that, but I think it's easy for people to dismiss stuff as being, well, I've seen this before. And I mean, I've done this at times where there have been certain stories where I've seen this element here, this element there, this other element in the third spot. Yep, they put them together, but they didn't add anything new. Here, there are similarities between some of these characters and other things we have seen before. And you could argue, think, well, huh, he's kind of sort of like maybe, you know, Brainiac 5 or whatever. But even that, I think, is a stretch. While he's smart, totally different personality. And if all you're doing is saying, well, if you're looking for ways to discard this or discount this, you can find them. But I think you're doing it a huge disservice. Abnett and Lanning are highly creative, highly capable, and highly entertaining writers, I think. This is something where it looks like they're really getting the chance to kind of, you know, exercise some creative freedom, not have to worry about how it's going to fit into the big picture at Marvel or DC or really any other title, and just kind of, you know, tell some really good stories. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this.
Yeah, I'm on board with this. This was a great first issue. I liked it a lot. Gave it a 4. I mean, strong 4, but it was a well done first issue.
What held it back from the 5?
I don't know. I just didn't. I liked it a lot. I just didn't come out of it saying, "Wow, you know, that was." I think the ending on it didn't wow me.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, the reason I ask is I'm in the exact position there, too. Strong 4. It just misses that 5, and frankly, I'm not entirely sure why.
You know what? I think, you know, realistically, if they would have ended the story 2 pages sooner, I would have probably given it a 5.
With the last splash page? Yeah.
That was cool. That's the way to go out of the issue.
Yeah, you're right.
They did 2 more pages, and it's just like, I didn't really like the page that they ended on. It was just enough to notch it down for me.
Well, it goes from a reveal to a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And I think ending on a cliffhanger is a writing crutch. I think ending on a really good reveal gives you something to speculate and talk about and is a solid way to end an issue. And I think you're right, if they'd ended 2 pages earlier. Because those next 2 pages would have made for a really good intro for the next issue.
Yeah.
I really want to see where they go with this. Now, did you notice, I think it's Thinkwell's name, which is very similar to Paul Anderson, noted sci-fi writer.
Yeah, the sci-fi writer, I noticed.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice little touch. I hope they can keep this going on a consistent, timely basis, etc. I really want to see what happens with this. So now, later, let's see, this goes up on Monday. Later this week is going to be Comic-Con International. We mentioned that last Weekly Comic Spotlight. Just as a reminder, 7th annual podcasting panel. That's going to be Thursday, 6 o'clock in room 9. Bob will be representing us for the Comic Book Page podcast. Brian Christman will be there for Comic Geek Speak. Jimmy Aquino for Comic News Insider. Josh Flanagan for iFanboy. John Suntress as Word Balloon. Pat Loika for Loikamania. And Cameron Hathaway for Cammy's Comic Corner. Very interesting panel every year. Flavor of it tends to change depending who's moderating and you know what questions get asked. Afterwards, dinner, we said the plan's Rock Bottom Brewery.
Rock Bottom Brewery. I put a thread on the forum called something like SDCC Thursday Night Dinner, and it's got the address and all the info. It's got the blurb about the podcasting panel. You know, you can either meet us over at the restaurant, you know, somewhat after the podcast. Usually, it's, you know, the podcasting panel ends at 7. By the time we kind of chat a little bit and walk over there, we usually make it to Rock Bottom probably, what, about 7:20 to 7:30-ish.
I'd say around 7:30-ish, depending.
Yeah. So, you know, you can either be at the podcasting panel if you're interested, meet up with us and walk over with us, or if you want to come and just have dinner, you can meet us over there. But, you know, if you're going to come, it'd be good to either shoot us an email at theguys@comicbookpage.com or go on the forum thread and post. Just let us know so we get kind of a feeling for how many people to allow for. Last year we had, what, about 12 to 15 people there?
Yeah, thereabouts. Thereabouts sounds about right. And that way we can just get a big enough table and stuff, and, you know, when we tell them how many people there are, it's nice to be sort of accurate.
Yeah.
And Rock Bottom Brewery is about 4 or 5 blocks from the convention center on G Street, which is, it's more or less a straight shot down the gas lamp. I think it's off 1 block to the left or whatever. It's not hard to find at all.
Yeah.
And it's not that far of a walk either.
Yeah, it's about a 10, 15 minute walk.
Yeah.
Depending on how you hit that light.
Once you get across the street, it goes faster. But getting across harbor, yeah, that can take some time. So, if you're going to be at Comic-Con and stuff, we've got threads on the forum about that. Please let us know you're going to be there. We'd certainly like to talk with you.
And a lot of us have posted up various panels that we're interested in and on what days. I personally put that up every year and usually only hit about half the panels. This year, I will probably be at most of the panels that I have said, because I'm going to be spending very little money at con this year. You know, that's something that I posted about on the forum and probably talk about maybe next week. But it will be a fun show. There's a lot of great panels. I've got a pretty full calendar on each day of just interesting panels I want to go to. So
I have not even had time to really read through the panel listing. I mean, there's like 600 and something panels or whatever. I usually do that on the drive out. What I have found, though, is you can walk the entire convention floor, and if you've got a little bit of self-control, not spend tons of money. So yeah, it is possible to do that.
Well, there you have the problem.
I see the lack of self-control.
A little bit of self-control part.
I see how that goes. Very little bit of self-control. I like walking the floor just to see what's out there, what's new. Some years I've picked up some really cool comics at Smaller Press or at Artist Alley. Other years, not so much. And I'm hoping to find some cool stuff this year. Not really planning on spending lots of money, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
I'm going to make some very targeted incursions down onto the floor to see various people and creators and booths, but I'm probably not going to just wander up and down the aisles.
That makes sense. Temptation lurks around every corner.
That's right.
And down every aisle, in every booth. It's if you have no self-control, have lots of money. It's the only hope. And a pack mule. Somebody to carry all that stuff.
And that's, you know, like most years, right? I have my kids there and $1,200 in my wallet. So
yeah.
There you go.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Action Comics number 11 from DC, Invincible Iron Man number 520 from Marvel, and Morning Glories number 20 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.